I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
One size fits all seems like a good idea for clothes until you try them on. Same goes for healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. Learn more at uh1.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hey, Cypher.
Yo, 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 yo.
Before we set off this...
Check, check.
No, we hear... I got it. You sound fine.
Check, check. One, two.
Before we set off this incredible Juan Ep with the great Ed Lover,
That's right.
Aren't we doing a live show soon?
Okay. November the 9th. It comes right after the 8th. November 9th. We're doing a show. A Juan Ep is live for the New York Comedy Festival. Now, listen to me. I know you're thinking, well, you guys do hip-hop. Why are you doing a comedy festival? It's a mashup. It's a crossbreed. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
It's a trans genre show.
Be careful, because you're already associated with Dave Chappelle. So just be mindful.
Look, New York Comedy Festival, there's some live podcasts happening. Of course, ours is in there. Juan Ep is live. We have Ricky Velez. He just dropped his special on HBO. Amazing. We got Jared Fried, an amazing, hilarious podcaster and comedian.
Okay.
We're going to figure out the hip-hop portion of it in a minute. I got some ideas. I don't want to tell you yet, but tickets are on sale. You got to get them early. TheStandNYC.com. Or you can just go to our Instagrams. Got that link in the bio.
There you go.
And what time is it again, Billy?
8 p.m.
8 p.m. November 9th, Juan Ep is live. We need all our Juan Ep goonies.
And while we're at it, I don't get as many plugs in as Sir Plugslot over here, but I do want to say tickets are on sale the night before Thanksgiving, Thanksgiving Eve, Styles P, Crime Apple, Flea Lord, Mayhem Loren. I just added my girl Vel the Wonder from the Real 8 album. Cypher Sounds is going to be in the building. This is why I need a new graphic designer, because I need to make a whole new flyer with all the names on it, a proper new flyer.
But go get
your tickets right now. And also that Saturday night in the DMV at the Fillmore, the same show, minus Vel. I don't think Vel will be at the DC show. But go cop your tickets to that, all right?
Hey, also all the Juan Ep fans, I see you at the shows. I see my Juan Ep fans came through to Vermont. They came through.
I want proof. They actually said they're Juan Eppers.
Juan Ep fans coming through, and I appreciate it. I got another show November 3rd in Raleigh, North Carolina. Come through at Good Nights Comedy Club November 4th. Me and my friend Will Sylvans, we had the DC Improv. A lot of comedy shows.
Is your mom going to go? Is your mom going to go to the Raleigh show?
No, she lives in Charlotte. That's far.
Damn.
I already got my mom tickets to see Pitbull and Theo Vaughn.
Oh, how about this?
My mom started hitting me up for tickets.
But that's incredible. Pitbull, that's incredible. By the way, Ballard, my dear friend Ballard hit me up, and he said he's staying at the Rio in Vegas the whole weekend you're there.
Come through, Ballard.
He's coming. He's coming through. Yeah, he's definitely going to go through.
Well, by the time this airs, I'm in Vegas. I'm in Vegas from October 25th to the 31st.
Oh, that's all this weekend. Okay, this coming week. Yeah. So if you're in Vegas this week, you're at the Rio.
Yeah, this week. A comedy cellar. We don't have to say Rio. Just a comedy cellar. Rio is a nasty establishment.
So,
but the comedy cellar.
So I should be judging Ballard for staying near the comedy cellar, is what you're saying.
Is he staying in the Rio?
I think he's staying in the Rio.
Listen, here's the deal with Vegas. You catch a good price on a room.
That's
you
it.
Take it. You want to be out and about anyway.
It doesn't matter. You're fine.
The rooms are very spacious. They just haven't been updated since Prince was there in 1990.
Right. Yo, until they tore it down, my spot used to be the Sahara. I was in there. And we're talking about years after it was anything good.
Yeah.
But I could get a room for $69, $79. I was there.
Exactly. Why not?
All right, let's get started now, shall we? Hey, good morning.
Good afternoon.
Good evening.
And good night.
Oh, and Scythe.
Yes, sir. Oh!
Shouts to DJ Mark, the 45 King. But today, it's about our guest, the legendary Ed Lover on Ed the program Lover. On WANEP. What up, Ed?
What's up, y'all? How y'all doing this morning?
Man, we are doing good, man. Really, really pleased to have you on here, man. We've talked for years. Man, going all the way back to when we were up against you in the morning, we've talked about how great it would be to have you on here and talk, man.
Yeah, I appreciate it, man. Thanks for asking.
I saw the other day, I was watching a live, man, where you were telling stories about your favorite, you were talking about your favorite Biggie records. And yeah. Just the little things, Ed, that this, Scythe, the things that this guy says, as yeah. Little just throwaway lines that he's saying, are just, like, bro, there's almost no one who was more involved with everybody in the glory days of hip hop than you, Ed. You were around everybody during all the years that we all love so much. So I was just like, we got to get this guy on because you probably have stories sitting in your head that you don't even think about being stories. They're just your life.
It's just, to me, it's just like different interactions with people, you know, during that time. And I guess they, in the long run, they become stories, but I never viewed them as just like actuals, you know, oh, this is going to be a story when it's all said and done. It was just things that happened during that time.
But here's the thing about you, and this happens to me too, but not as much as you, Ed. There's big moments that happen. That I was there when Jay-Z and Biggie were on stage together at the Palladium. That's a big story, right?
Right.
And there's a famous picture where they're both wearing horrible looking mango colored suits or whatever it is. But that's a big story. But then, like, we have these moments like where we were in the studio just chilling. And like, something happened, like Premier played the sample of a beat that became blah, 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 or, you know what I mean? So there's like, we just been in it for so long.
Right.
That if you just talk about normal interactions, you're going to hit upon something that was like, wait, what? You were around for that? Or you heard this? Or, oh, he was really going out with her? So like, there's big stories and then there's just normal life.
So Scythe, here's what we should do with Ed. I want to ask Ed for a little while about your story, just because I don't know what your story was prior.
The origin story.
Yeah, the origin story, because I don't know your story prior to Yo MTV Raps. And and then also, then Scythe, what we should do is we should just go down a list of some people who we're interested in and ask for Ed's personal history with that person, when he remembers first meeting them, et cetera, et cetera. Would that be cool, Ed?
Yeah, that works for me. It's all good.
So how did it start for you? What is the hip hop?
My introduction to music came in school. Like a lot of other people, that's back when they cared enough about us to make sure that we had to take a music class in school. Mm-hmm. So I was always a person that loved music. So I started like everybody else with that little flute, that little wooden flute that we
recorded.
Yeah. We went from that, and then I started playing clarinet for a little while, and then I didn't think clarinet was such a manly instrument, so I switched to trumpet, and I played trumpet for a very long time. And then once I played trumpet in school, there was a local band around my way by the name of Oasis 2 that was looking for a trumpet player, so they brought me in. We were top 40 band, like the youngest, one of the youngest top 40 bands in the city. Now, I'm an old dude.
Queens?
Yeah, this is Queens. This is all over New York City. That's when you couldn't go into a night establishment anywhere, and especially any local place in New York that did not have a band. Even right. if you went to a club, there was always the band, and then there was always the DJ.
Right.
So we were like the youngest cats on the scene at that day that were really considered very good. Like, I met Full Force before I knew that they were Full Force, because we were all doing the same circuit of clubs.
Right.
And this is probably like 77, 78.
How bow-legged was Lou?
Always bow-legged, man.
Always bow-legged, okay.
Yeah, always bow-legged. Those are my guys from a long time ago, man. you know, when we were a young group. And then from there, we just kind of developed, you know, when you got a band of that size, it's like sometimes it's 10, sometimes it's 13. Some, you know, guys come in and go out, and for different reasons. And I always just stuck with the guys that were the core of the group. And then from around my way in Queens, I was always known for, I've always known for rapping and for freestyling. I knew that I could rap. I knew that much, but it was always the tear between hip hop and live music. And live music always seemed to went out until time comes. We're looking for a record deal. We couldn't get a record deal. We're doing this, we're doing that, we're doing the other. And house music was hot, and I was always known for doing parodies. So we changed our name from Oasis, and then we were the Function Freaks for a long time because we were really heavy into the funk. And then we became No Face. And that was what we were. It was me and Mark Sex and Shaw. We were No Face. And
No Face, okay.
We actually had a deal with Def Jam. We had a label deal with Def Jam called No Face Records. And we put out Bitches with Problems was our group. And we signed Live Squad. Rest in peace to Big Stretch. We signed them to No Face Records, because those are my guys from around the way.
Wow.
And then once we get ready to put our album out, we had already put a single out on a different label. We redid, well, I rewrote House, the Jungle Brothers, Girl, I House You. And I made it a dirty song called Girl, I Hump You.
Okay. Yeah,
so we used to, right. so it actually took off in the house music clubs. We used to gig a lot off of that one record. And it just developed. And then when I got to MTV, MTV caught wind of what I was doing with No Face. Because No Face, we patterned No Face after the Two Live Crew. The No Face was supposed to be the East Coast version of the Two Live Crew. Like we had girls come out when we performed with pasties on their nipples. Like we was some wild boys. We wore ski masks, and we just, cause we were called No Face. So we would wear the old like Mil Mascaris old wrestling mask.
Yeah, yeah.
And all that. Yeah, we would do all of that. So nobody knew who we were. And especially in the beginning of MTV, we would never take our mask off to the end of the show. And then we'd take our mask on and reveal that it's actually me, the same guy from Your Own TV Raps. So right after we got our RAL, Rush Associated label deal, and Hype Williams did the BWP video, we had to all sign off on Hype Williams. That's his first video he ever did. And MTV got wind of it. It was something morally in the contract that I couldn't do that and do this. And that's how it all started, man. I met Dre actually at the audition for Your Own TV Raps.
Oh, wow.
Really?
I didn't know Dre. I didn't know Dre personally. I know I heard of what they was doing on WBAU, yeah. And I knew about him a little bit about being the Beastie Boys DJ, but we didn't personally know each other at all.
Oh shit! So the MTV thing was an audition?
Yeah, it was an audition because they had Fab.
Right.
What happened with the MTV thing is my best friend to this day, mother is huge in the Episcopalian Church. Ted's father was big in the Episcopalian Church. So to keep her son, Kurt Flirt, she used to take me with them on the religious retreats. And that's where we met Ted. And we were kids. Like, we were like 14, 15
Ted
years
Demme?
Old. And that's how I met Ted Demme.
Wow.
Yeah. And all through high school, we stayed cool. All through college, we stayed cool. So when I saw his name all over MTV as like, production assistant, then associate producer, and then producing. And then I saw the Your Own TV Raps he did with Run DMC, and I saw his name on the credits for that. And then when they did Your Own TV Raps with Fab Five Freddy, and I saw Ted Demme, I started automatically bugging him about doing something on that show because I knew hip hop, and I knew that I loved it. And I knew, you know, what we like as a people. I was like, well, I could do a record review. I could do a movie review. Like, hip hop has such a great impact on pop culture, period, that we took a construction boot like the Timberland and made it a hip hop boot, right? Yeah. And it's like almost like everything that we touch, we make it hip hop. So, you know, I just kept begging Ted. And then when they decided they wanted to do a Your Own TV Raps today, now the funny story behind that is Fab didn't want to do the Daily Show because Fab was directing videos.
Yep.
You know, Fab was all into the New York City art culture and everything that he was doing. You know, he was, him and Basquiat was tighter than a Knot, you know, and all of that. You know, he knew Andy Warhol and all of those cool, cool downtown people. He didn't want to be overexposed, he said, by doing a Daily Show.
Right.
So they had to find somebody to do the Daily Show. So Ted knew me. Peter Daugherty, God rest his soul, knew Dre from DJing with the Beastie Boys. And he called Dre in, and they called me in for an audition. And Ted is the one that saw Laurel and Hardy, and he put us together.
Mm. What year was this that the Daily Show started?
1978.
No, 88.
88. So
Fab started 88. We came on in 89.
Wow. And
So there was no one. Did anyone else audition?
Nobody that was noteworthy at the time that I know of. I know just Ted saw Dre and he saw me. And he just looked at us and was like, yo. And I was like, can y'all audition together? And I was like, yeah. I was like, Dre, where you from? And he was like, you know, he told me about, I knew he was from Westbury and stuff. I mean, like, what's your ethnicity? And he was like, well, you know, my father and mom part Jamaican. And I was like, well, can you do a Jamaican accent? And he was like, yeah. So we just started doing a Jamaican accent together. And Ted put it on camera. And he took it to the higher ups. And he was like, since this is a studio show, we got Fab as a single guy going out on the road. Just one person, singular. I want these two people for the Daily Show. And it was like, well, we got $1,000. We got $1,000 a week. If they want to split $1,000, we can do it. So we was like, hell yeah.
Do you remember the first day? You remember walking in there to do it with no?
It wasn't the way it was now. At that time, MTV had different studios that they would rent out. So there's a studio on 57th and 11th that we shot in.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I remember. I was very nervous. I hardly looked at the camera the first day.
Well, how would you know what to do? Like, was Ted just trying to coach you? Because you'd been a performer in a band.
All our responsibility was this. Come in and do the voiceover parts of it, right, and introduce videos. So Dre and I just started coming up with things to say and things to do. It was more, you know, like, welcome to your MTV Raps. Hey, we got this today. This is going to be shown today. Blah, blah, blah. How you feeling, Dre? How you feeling? Ed, we was on camera like 3 times or something like that. Here go the video. Even when we said goodbye, it was over, you know, it was voiceover. Mm. When we said goodbye, it was like, see ya. And they used to put the big CEO on the screen. Mm-hmm. We went on camera that long, and then we started developing days. Well, today is exercise day, and today is this day, and today is food day. And I remember MTV sending us a memo telling us to stop eating on camera. Like, we had this, like, little corner in the studio that they had built out, and we even have dress rooms. Dre and I had to step behind that big wall you saw and change our clothes for the next day. And we shot everything in the day. And the beauty of it was you didn't watch the videos. They put the videos in later.
Right.
So your job is just to lead to the video. And that's it.
So at first,
you shot four episodes in one day or whatever.
We did five episodes in one day.
So Monday through Friday, all in one day.
Which actually makes that out. It makes that $500 a week a little bit more palatable because it's really just one day of work.
It was one day of work. And I had a job. I worked for a school safety for New York City. I worked at Andrew Jackson High School, 2 blocks from my mother's house in Queens. And I kept that job.
Friendly, how long did you keep that job?
I kept that job for the first 2.5 years of MTV.
Wow.
Now,
how long were you on your MTV Raps?
6 years.
At what point, if you started in 89, at what point did it start to become like, oh shit, Ed Lover on the street?
I think when we went to an hour,
because
when we first started, we were a half an hour. When we went to an hour, that's when the confidence was gained. And you know, we were already pushing MTV for a contract. And we had the great Leo Cohen step in and do what he did, because we were being managed by Rush Associated. I mean, like Rush Management. And we just stepped in, man. And that's when it really became real. I could tell you the first time it ever became real. Dre and I were hired to host the show in Detroit at the Joe Louis Arena. And Too Short was on that show. There's a couple of people on there, but I remember distinctly it's the NWA were headlining that show. Eazy-E and NWA. And that's the famous scene in
the movie.
Yeah.
When the cops came.
Yeah, the cops came, but it didn't happen. It did not even happen like that. They took liberty with that. What happened was,
it's a story.
Yeah,
you leave of course them alone. It's a story. They made a beautiful movie.
But what happened? It's a great movie too. What happened with that was actually the cop. They were told not to do fuck the police, and Easy thought they weren't doing fuck the police also. And the cop threw an M80 on the stage and a pack of, and they threw firecrackers in the M80. I watched the cop light the shit.
Cop, what?
Yeah, so they thought somebody was shooting. So they ran off the fucking stage, and it was all this mayhem backstage with them, with the cops, and Easy's arguing with them, with Dre and them, like, y'all wasn't supposed to do that song. We agreed to do the song. Not to do the song. It was like a bunch of bullshit. But Dre and I hosted that concert. And when the guy did that was backstage with the microphone said, your host, and this is the first time I ever been like on a stage in an arena that big. And the guy was like, your host for this evening, from Yo MTV Raps Today, Ed Love and Dr. Dre, and the people lost their fucking mind. I was like, wow. Oh shit. I was like, yo, we're kind of like famous, dude, like for real.
Wow.
But you know, for Dre, it wasn't nothing because he had been DJing for the Beastie Boys on tour. Right. But for me, that was like, yo, dude, we are really like, people really know us from this shit.
Yeah, that must have been a different experience for you altogether. To all of a sudden now you're walking out on stages in front of that many people and people are cheering for you all of a sudden?
Yeah. Yeah, people knowing who you are, people wanting your autograph and, you know, the little cameras with the... You got to take them to the drugstore or the Walgreens or whatever to get the film developed. It was those pictures. It was that. And I was like, wow.
How much did you and Dre like each other? And like, how close did you guys become?
We've always had a bond that we love each other to death. No matter, you know, we're still close to this day. We don't have to talk every day, but when we talk, it's like, you know, we never stopped talking. So I've always enjoyed Dre, but we've always been able to not force like this super bond friendship that everybody thinks we're best friends. Yeah. I've always had my friends and Dre's always had his friends, but we're still friends.
Yeah, yeah, of course.
Because
I being in a partnership.
Yeah, because Syph and I know what it's like to get thrown together. It's a different kind of thing.
Yeah.
Who
being in a partnership sometimes could be a little tough,
especially when you do morning radio, bro.
Yeah. So who are you telling? Y'all know that when you do a morning radio, you're actually kind of married to the people that you're doing radio with,
bro. Me and Rosenberg get along so much better now because you know why? It's not 5:30 a.m.
It's so it makes such a huge difference. Like, bro, jumping on here on a Sunday mid morning. It's like such a different experience than when we first met each other and we're walking in at 5 a.m. together. It's tough to like anyone when you see them every day in that setting.
Every single day at the worst hour possible.
Absolutely. And sometimes they get on your nerve and sometimes you get on their nerve. And it's sometimes it can be difficult. But when that magic happens, it happens, man.
Oh, yeah. We had magic. Did you ever have to threaten Dre to tie your shoelaces together and go fight in the parking lot across the street?
We never got that far, but I'll tell you what, I didn't like traveling with Dre was a pain in the ass. Dre snores like nobody's business, dude. Like we would do LA, right? So once we got our contract with MTV, had us doing other stuff with MTV, we would fly to LA and, you know, they took us out of the studio. So we would go do Too Short and,
right,
you know, do this and do that. And at first, you know, when you're doing that, it's let's put you two guys together in one room. Yeah. Then later on, you start realizing like, listen, I need my own space. I need own room. I'm not sitting in a room with Dre because I can't get any sleep because he snores like crazy. And then it becomes, okay, we're going to fly you guys coach. So then you got to fight for first class. You know, like that's a 6-hour flight. I'm tall. I'm not sitting in coach for 6 hours. Yeah. So I'm in first class with Dre. We're going to LA and we're coming back from LA on a red eye from LA back to New York City. And I always had this thing with those big planes that if I could get those four seats, like it's the real empty plane and I can get four seats, I'm good. I'm going to go back there. I'm going to lay down and I'm going to sleep the entire flight back across four seats. And I'm back there like on a 747. So one of those big planes, it might have been a 767. and I feel a tap on my shoulder. And I wake up, I look up, and it's the flight attendant, and I can hear Dre snoring from first class. Snoring. And she asks me, is that your friend up there? And I'm like, yeah. She says, he's disturbing other passengers. Is this something you can do about it? I'm like, I can't. Why do you think I'm back here? Because like, he's killing me right now.
Yo, so
he's murdering me.
Yo, so do you remember any of the first guests they put in there with you? Because that must have
They wouldn't let us have guests for a long time. I think if one of our first, I know we had Mel Gibson on because he was in that studio doing something. And I think the very
That was Carole not what King I expected.
Carole King was our very first guest when you're on TV right
now. That's yep. The illest trivia question of all time. No. Yeah.
She was, because she just happened to be in the studio. And there was always this thing where they don't want to bother this person and they don't want to bother her. And Drea, it was me and Drea, just, you know, go down there and say, hey, we're a fan of your music. We got this little show that we're doing. Would you stop in for a minute and put a chair there for her and, you know, ask her what she know about hip-hop, who her favorite hip-hop artist was, songs that she wrote for other people. We knew who Carole King was because we both come from the background of music. So she was our very first guest.
That's the thing about MTV. They used to be MTV. I was there for a couple years, too, and they weren't like radio where you could, like, kind of just freestyle. They had all these rules and regulations, and I was like,
right,
how about I just go ask the person? Because they're like, well, they don't fit the genre. I said, they don't have to be a rapper to be on the show.
Exactly.
They just might be a fan of hip-hop, and they could tell that's their right. favorite hip-hop moment, and we have a great moment. And if it doesn't work, we don't use it. Like, we're taping it.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's exactly how they were. That's how a lot of the guests came. That's how we had Bill Cosby. That's how we had Bobby Brown at the height of his career when he was 10 million in. It was my personal relationship
right.
with Bobby Brown that got Bobby Brown on. They Bobby Brown.
What did Bill Cosby have to say? Because he was never known as a big hip-hop fan.
Well, he called me. He called MTV looking for me.
Wow. Hold on. You have an I'd like to talk to you story.
Yes. Yeah. I have that Bill Cosby story. They called me and Ted called me at home. And he was like, yo, somebody from the Cosby Show just called here looking for you. And they left the number. I think you need to call them back. And I was like, oh, damn. You know, I'm a fan. I was a fan of Bill Cosby from his clean comedy albums, from Fat Albert, from I Spy. Oh,
come on, everything,
to,
bro.
You know, to everything, the Jell-O Pudding commercial.
Oh, Uptown Saturday Night.
Uptown Saturday Night, a come piece on, of the action. Let's do it again. Bill Cosby, man. I loved Bill Cosby. And then before I called back, I remember I was in my apartment in Jersey City. I remember Eddie Murphy saying, Bill Cosby only calls you for two reasons. Right? Either he wants to tell you that you're great or he thinks that you are embarrassing the black culture and he wants to tell you about it. So, you know, we had did a lot of characters on the show. So I'm nervous about calling Bill Cosby back. So I called back to the Silver Cup Studios, to the Cosby Show, and I'd say, hey, my name is Ed Lover from MTV and somebody from here called me. And the young lady goes, yeah, Mr. Cosby want to talk to you. Hold on. And I'm like, there's no way Bill Cosby is getting ready to get on this phone. And the next voice I heard on the phone was Bill Cosby. Ed, hello, how are you? This is Bill Cosby. And he goes in and he starts talking to me. And I go, yes, Mr. Cosby. He goes, no, call me Bill. Call me Bill. No, call me Bill. He goes, listen, my daughter is a big rap fan and she's in my dressing room and I'm watching this Yo Raps thing that you guys are doing and you're doing this character and you got like the hunting hat on and the glasses with the tape in the middle of them, Jack. And I said, yeah, it's a character that I do called Perry J. Periwinkle III. He's like, yeah, and I'm watching the thing and I'm waiting. I'm like, he's getting ready to kill me right now. He goes, man, I was cracking up. That was so funny. I'm watching the thing and you're on the floor and you're up and you're dancing and you're doing this. And he's like, listen, my daughter loves that show. How about I come and do something on that show and then I'll have you on my show? And I'm
What?
Like, you want to
come and this is an 80s version of a DM.
a crazy DM. I mean, insane.
Yeah, crazy DM.
From the guy. The number one show in the world. At
one of our heroes, like
right, the Cosby Show.
I mean, he filthied it up now, but
we're talking this, this is an era that. When you can't even really put into words how big this man was on television. No way to describe
Absolutely.
It.
So
now, why would you want to do your show?
Yeah, we set it up for Bill Cosby to come and do a week worth of Your TV Rats with us. And we set it up for the day. And every big wig from Viacom came down.
Of course.
The only person that didn't come down was Summer Redstone himself.
Okay.
Everybody else came down for Bill Cosby. It had the green room cleared out. They're trying to figure, he's, you know, this guy's giving $20, $30 million to Temple. Like, he's rolling in the dough. So you don't know what you're going to get. Yeah. Everybody's cleared everything out for Bill Cosby to come. And we're standing in the front, and he gets out of a yellow cab by himself with a newspaper on his arm.
Wow.
And just walks in, and everybody's on set, and everybody's watching and doing this thing. He turns to me, and he says, when you guys usually do this, how many people are out here? I said, the cameraman and the floor producer.
Yeah.
And he goes, wait a minute. He stops everything. He goes, wait, everybody, get the fuck out of here right now. He's like, I'm going to come and see you guys when it's over, but let's make this as natural as possible the way the guys work. And we did a whole week worth of shows with Bill Cosby.
A whole week?
He was on every single day for an entire week.
He changed outfits? Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Is that one of that's still on YouTube?
Yeah, he's there. He was there, man. We did a week worth of shows with him, and I did the character that he loved and everything.
Well, the hard part is Viacom has such a weird, bad relationship with YouTube.
Oh, that's right.
Finding things like I'm looking right now. There are random clips of YoMTV Raps, but you can't really find nearly as much as you should be able to find because the Viacom YouTube thing has always been weird. I don't know.
Yeah.
It's a pain in the ass. So did you keep a relationship with him after that?
Well, I did the Cosby Show. I did the Cosby Show twice.
What'd you do
on the Cosby Show?
Yeah, I played the first time I came, I played a cab driver. And I did the table read with them. I remember being like fascinated by sitting there with Michael Jamal Warner and Felicia Rashad and Bill Cosby. Because you know, you did table read one day, mm-hmm. and then the producers came down and you read again for the producers. Then you would start rehearsal and then they would chop, trim.
But they did it here?
Yeah, we did it at Silver Cup Studios in Queens.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I did the show with him, and then they gave me the air date of the show. And then he called me again. He personally called me. And he was like, I know you thought you was going to be on the show this week, coming next week, but the show ran too long, and we edited it, and we had to edit your part out. But believe me, I will have you back. And I was just thankful for the experience. And in my head, I'm going, he's full of shit. He ain't going to have me back. 2 weeks later, I'm back on the Cosby Show. So now I'm sitting there, and he's got me, and he's going, he introduces everybody. Everybody come back, and he goes, and we brought back Ed Lover, and everybody's clapping. He's like, Ed, there's no way you're going to get cut this time. You're playing a doctor. And I go, oh, he goes, no, you're a cab driver again. But he had me, but he had me so entwined, my part was entwined in the story that it couldn't have got cut out.
Right.
Yo, that's crazy. That is crazy. So, how did you start to get comfortable being in this celebrity world and then interviewing artists who I'm guessing you were a huge fan of, and they're treating you now all of a sudden within a couple of years? You know, it's not like you have some long history in radio. It's not like you were a rapper.
Radio came after.
Exactly. Yeah. So for me, for example, by the time I got to a place where it became normal for me to interact with artists, I'd spent years kind of working my way there. You sort of, in the blink of an eye, now you're the man they're watching on TV and rappers want to come sit with you.
Right.
That must be crazy.
Every day is powerful,
like
man.
Like you guys just said. I think what separated me and Dre from a lot of other people were fans. So for everybody to come on the set, you know, it was good for them. MTV is a worldwide thing. Your MTV Raps was a worldwide show. So they got exposure all over the world and not just the United States. It was the fact that I cannot believe I'm getting ready to meet Public Enemy. I'm getting ready to meet Kane. I'm getting ready to meet Heavy D. I'm getting ready to meet KRS-One. I'm getting ready to meet Light. I'm getting ready to meet Yo-Yo. I'm getting ready to meet Ice Cube. I'm getting ready to meet Easy. I'm getting ready to meet Too Short. For me, from I was a fan. So it was never like, it was approached to me like they were fans. I was always a fan of theirs.
That's the same thing that happened to us, Rosenberg. What? We were fans, man.
Yeah, I mean,
we were fans. When somebody was coming to our show, we were so happy.
Yeah, it's, right. It means it obviously it hits different when you're a fan. Like to this day, if I interview someone who a label's pushing but you don't know them, you try your best to do the research and it's cool, but it's not the same as when an icon, someone who you already are a fan of, walks in. It's so easy to do the job when you already love what they do.
That's right.
And so, at what point during this process? Because there's a lot to get to. There's an album. There's a movie, there's radio shows. All of these things unfolded. What was the order of things that started to happen for you and Dre?
Yo on TV Raps 89, 93, Steve Smith flips Hot 97 to the first all hip-hop radio station on the FM in New York. It comes to us to do the morning show. Put Lisa with us because Lisa's a radio veteran.
Right.
Right? Dre had experience in the radio. We had already been doing like the operating room on BLS at like some weekends on BLS.
So you've been filling in on BLS?
Yeah, we had the operating room, you know, Dr. Dre and Ed Love's operating room, stuff like that. Funny thing about that, I used to have an hour playing reggae on Saturday nights on BLS.
Oh wow, I did not know that.
Yeah, during that time.
And you guys would come on after Marley? Going.
Huh?
Would you guys come on after Marley?
We came on. I don't think Marley was there anymore when we came on.
Wow, okay. Was Chuck there?
Yeah. No. BLS was doing
David that fight.
Was
David Levy there?
Huh?
Well, David Levy was Kiss.
David Levy was Kiss.
Yeah.
He was on BLS. So we did that. I did that for a little while, and then it was so much critique coming from the program director at the time. I was just like, this ain't even worth my time if you're going to keep continually telling me what I can and cannot do. So I left it alone. And Dre and T-Money kept doing it for a while. So 93 was Hot 97. And then 93 actually was the same year that...
Who's the Man too, right?
Yeah, Who's the Man came out. Yeah.
So
it all started just like coming right behind each other. We did Who's the Man in 91, 92, and then it came out in 93.
What
a life.
I know. How do you go from in 1980... early 88, you're just working for the public schools, and in 1991 into 92, you're working on a movie. Yeah,
this
should be noted, because I think there are probably some people out there listening that we take for granted that they all understand Who's the Man. The Man, we often refer to the soundtrack now, but what listeners have to understand is the conversation around Who's the Man was, yo, Ed and Dre have a movie, and every rapper is in the movie. Every rapper's in the movie. That was the whole hook of...
In New York, too.
Who's the Man?
Right.
Right.
In New York. It wasn't an L.A. movie. You know what I mean?
Right. Our thought process behind that, where Dre and I collaborated on that heavy, was the old Burt Reynolds Gumball Rally movies when you didn't know which star you was going to see. And they was traveling across country for some cash prize, and then it would be... anybody from Twiggy to Dom DeLuise or whoever was hot at the time. So we was like, yo, we're gonna make this movie, then we need to put our people in the movie.
Right.
So
but cause you got like House Party, Kid and Play, and like I'm sure they shot that in LA. You know what I mean? And it's like they don't ever really say where it is in the movie, where it takes place. But we know your movie was in New York. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, like New York Harlem
was your backdrop. Yeah.
Yeah, because we from New York. So we was like, we gotta do this New York movie. And it wasn't like somebody came to us and said, hey, you know, you guys are Kid and Player, you're Ed and Dre. I have this movie idea. Let's do this movie. That was something Dre and I came up with. So if you watch it, you see it says story by Dr. Dre and Ed Lover.
Right, we
came up with that. I came to Dre and was like, what do you think if we did a movie when we did this, that, and the third? And Dre was like, yeah, that'd be crazy. So let's do this and let's do that. And, you know, let's find oil in Harlem and all, you know. So that's what, and then it developed from that with our manager at the time, Charles Stetler, and brought in, went to New Line. They got the deal done and brought Ted in. And that was all from us. That wasn't from anybody looking for us.
Wow.
What was the movie successful? Like, did it do good?
It was well received. You know what happened with Who's the Man? This is the honest to God's truth.
Okay.
Who's the Man was released on the same weekend as the Rodney King verdict.
Wow.
I remember that.
We were still the number one comedy in America that week.
I remember that.
So I think after the riots and all that crap happened, I think our white fan base kind of just like, I'm scared to go to the movies.
Yeah.
You know, there's going to be a lot of black people in the movies. But we did well. It did well.
Yeah.
Let me.
I had a movie. It came out 9/11. So I know the feeling.
Oh.
Yeah. It had the same. Had a starring role.
No. So if you definitely weren't a starring role. No, you weren't.
No, Puerto Rican runs New York. It wasn't.
No. I don't remember. I don't recall that at all, actually. Here we go. Here's the cast. I'm going to go over the, here are the people that in this movie. Dre and Ed get first listing, of course. Okay, then you have Salt in the movie, Dennis Leary, Bernie Mac, Terrence Howard, Guru, Ice-T, Duffy from MTV.
Peppa.
Peppa's there too. I went over Peppa. Pep's there too. Yep. Peppa.
Yo.
Okay, well, here are the cameos. Be Real, Apache, Bill Bellamy, Bowlegged Lou, Bushwick Bill, Busta Rhymes, Chi Ali, CL Smooth, Dell, D-Nice, Drez, Eric B., Fab Five, Flavor Flav, Freddie Fox, Heavy D., House of Pain, Humpty Hump, Kid Capri, Criss Cross, KRS, Leaders of the New, Melly Mel, Moni Love, Naughty,
wow.
Pete Rock, Penny Hardaway, Fife Dog, rest in peace, Queen Latifah, Run DMC, Scottie Pippen, there's Peppa, Stretch, it looks like the Youngsters and Yo-Yo.
No, that wasn't the Youngsters. It was Criss Cross.
No, Criss Cross, but also the Youngsters. They were just random kids in the movie, it says.
Absolutely.
Q-Ron Goodman. Sure, that's Q from the Youngsters. Yeah.
How did you get all these people?
You asked them.
What rappers were getting asked to do a major motion picture in 1992?
Of course, but like, I gotta watch the movie again, because where did all these people fit?
Different scenes, man. We just, as we sat with Seth Greenland, who actually wrote the script, we would just fill it in, like, you know, okay, where did that person to be good there, that person to be good there. But there was one person that was on that soundtrack that was supposed to be in the movie that at the time was having whatever problem she was having, but didn't show up. And we wasted a whole day waiting for her to come. And that was Mary J.
I was about to say, had to be Mary. Had to be.
She was supposed to sing Amazing Grace in that movie.
Damn.
Now.
It was Mary.
Mary is
during the KC Trouble Mary days.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You saw the documentary about Mary?
Yes, yeah, it's absolutely phenomenal.
Phenomenal, bro. But I didn't know it was like that back in the day. And then that soundtrack was the first Biggie song.
That was, Party and Bullshit is on the Who's the Man soundtrack. That's, and Mary's You Remind Me.
And Hitting Switches.
Hitting Switches is on there with Eric Sermon.
And Don't Sleep on the House of Pain, Who's the Man either.
House of Pain is fire.
Because when I think Who's the Man, I always think about Heavy D. But also, but this joint.
Bro, this shit was fire.
Dead. That's the opening. What did Heavy do again? Right there too.
That's the opening, right?
What did Heavy do?
Heavy has his own Who's the Man, which came out at around the same time. But that House of Pain one. And also, don't forget, my favorite song on the whole soundtrack. So if I talk about this song, it feels like very often. Is it not here? It's not on. Yeah, what's next on the menu? Pete Rock and CL Smooth, of course.
Yeah, that was a dope record too. And Jodeci had Let's Go Through the Motions was on there, too.
Let's Go Through the Motions, too.
Who's the Man?
Yeah.
That was Puff on the soundtrack?
Yeah, that was Uptown.
So did you guys have anything to do with that, those parts of the movie, or did y'all just...
Yeah, we chose Uptown.
Wow.
We chose Uptown because the late, great Andre Harrell gave me the business because he called me and was like, "You a Queens nigga." You know, it was between Def Jam and Uptown. He was like, "You a Queens nigga. I know you're going to get that shit to Russell, because Russell used to manage you when I was over there at Rush. So I know you're giving that motherfucking soundtrack to Russell. But guess what?" He was like, "Def Jam ain't got no motherfucking R&B. And to have a good soundtrack, you need some R&B. And I was like, "You know what, Andre, I'll talk to you later." And I hung up and I told Dre, I said, "Dre, I think Andre is right, man." You know, Puff was hot. I was like, "Yo, we should give this to Uptown. You give it to Uptown, let Puff do it." And we gave it to Uptown.
How do you remember the first? Do you remember when you first knew of Puff Daddy as a person, at Puffy as a person?
Yeah, when he was a dancer.
Doing a lot of parties.
Yeah, he used to do a lot of parties. He had, but he was a dancer. He was mostly a dancer. He was dancing in Dougie's videos, mm-hmm. and a couple of other videos. You know, because all the dancers knew each other. You know, all the Josies,
yeah, that's a crazy
Fatimas, circle, yeah. And yeah, that's why I knew Puff.
But even Onyx was dancers.
Yeah. People don't believe that Onyx had the high top fade. We used to wear the big pants and the combat boots and all
it's
that.
So crazy how many
What's
people.
What's the other group that Uptown Flex always plays it? Do the Uptown Bounce.
Ziggy.
They were dancers.
Yeah.
Yo, it's when I used to work for Tigger, Tigger always told me Tigger was a dancer in the Sally video for Stetsasonic.
Oh, wow.
Really?
Yeah. Yo, a lot of people, when you ask them, there's a "I danced in blank" video is the first thing that happens.
Yeah.
Now, did you see Biggie at all during the around the time that record came out? I'm sure you had interactions with him all the way going back then, right?
I had interactions with Biggie because Biggie and Stretch and Pac was cool.
Mm.
And those are my dudes. The Stretch was Live Squad. Like I said, he was signed to our label, No Face Records, before we got him signed over there to Tommy Boy. And those are my guys, and they all met. Because remember, I had a Blink and You Miss Me cameo in Juice standing behind Queen Latifah. I ain't have no words.
At the DJ battle.
In the DJ battle.
I remember it.
Yeah, I was standing there.
Yep.
So that's when we met, really knew Pac. We knew Pac from DU, from Digital Underground. But when he was a roadie. But when we really concretely started messing with Pac is around the Juice, when they were doing Juice. Him and Stretch kicked it off. You know, they had music in common and weed in common and whatever.
And Big, Tretch, and then that's where Tretch got cool with Pac too, right?
Huh?
That's where Tretch got cool with Pac too, I think.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And Tretch, you know, I was living in Jersey at the time, so I knew Tretch and them through Latifah. And it's just different networks of people. So you would see Big because Big would be around. Sometime.
It must be so weird. I think like the more people did it, in some ways it's like the Biggie and Tupac stories are almost too connected, and like it's annoying how much people can't tell one story without telling the other. And then in another sense, it's almost underrated how insane it is that like someone like you, your thoughts about Biggie the first time are associated with Tupac.
Yeah, absolutely. Because when we hung with Pac, because you remember Live Squad was my baby. That was my group. Those are my dudes that I took off the streets because they wanted to rap. Those are my guys. So whenever me and Stretch were around together and Pac would come into town, it was like, "Yo, Pac is here. I'm getting ready to pick him up from the airport." And we'd be like, "Bet, let's go." And we might get in the car and Pac was like, yo, Big page me. Let's hit Brooklyn." And we would be in Brooklyn with Biggie and them. And this is like, you know, Party and Bullshit that came out already. It was like, that was that synergy between them dudes. Them dudes actually had a lot of love for each other. A lot of love.
Who else was in Live Squad? I was here.
It was Stretch, his brother Madge, and their DJ K-Lo.
And Stretch was killed.
Yeah, Stretch was killed a year to the day after the Quad shooting.
Right.
Wow. Wow.
I think I've only heard Stretch one time on like a Stretch Armstrong, coincidentally.
Oh, that's crazy. And they did a lot of production too. Mm. But they got signed to Tommy Boy and they got one of the greatest long form videos ever, man. Game of Survival. And then the whole thing crashed down with Cop Killer and Ice-T and all of that because they killed the cop in one of their videos too.
So. Oh, really?
Oh, God.
Yeah.
Hold on, I'm looking this up right
now. Oh, I thought you were gonna say in real life.
No, they killed a cop in one of their videos because they were I had such a hand in what they were doing. I was like, we're not just gonna do something to do it. You got to explain why you this way. So one of their songs is called Murderer, and it explains coming from being a kid that's parents get killed, why you stop caring and start doing hits, and it's all coming from the mind of a murderer. So, you know, they killed the cop and did whatever they had to do in one of those songs.
Yeah, there you go. Watch the here. I just saw this is on YouTube. So this is it. This is the
yeah, that's Game of Survival. I'm executive producer of that, and Tommy Boy spent $800,000 on it.
And it's an 8 minute video. Wow. 8 minute video, little story.
Yeah. The long form video. Nobody had did it.
Wow. I got to watch this whole thing. I've never seen this.
Yeah.
Now going back to the early days of you starting to do interviews, do you remember a feeling like did the guys at the top of the game, the Big Daddy Canes, the Rakims, the KRSs, let's start here. Did you sense a competition between those guys? Like how real is that a thing? We always hear about Kane and Rakim, who was the man, blah, blah, blah. Did you actually sense that between those main few dudes?
Not when it came to your MTV raps. No. No, for them, it was the same thing, but on a different level than it was for us. For us, it was, we got the best of the best on here. These are guys that we love. These are guys that we admire. Some of them, especially like Public Enemy being from Long Island and Dre, those guys, they already had, you know, a relationship, and Dre passing with some of them on tour, LL, Run DMC being from my neighborhood, I knew Jay and them personally. It was different. But when they were there, it was never that. It was always for them, I'm getting ready to get this MTV exposure. Mm-hmm. And you remember, right, MTV never played black videos. Right. So Your MTV Rides being the first all-black video show on MTV, it was for them like, damn, I'm getting ready to get this exposure into neighborhoods that I would never normally get to see my video.
Yeah.
You know, Uncle Ralph was absolutely the first to do it in New York City. Mm-hmm. But Your MTV Rides gave it that national and then international exposure that they wouldn't
otherwise. The worst time in history is when Your MTV Rides changed its times and then went against Video Music Box. And bro, you would break your remote control switching back and forth to channel 31 for Video Music Box and getting to MTV. But yo, you had those. I still have video VHS cassettes of those, because I moved to Long Island in 10th grade and I felt so disconnected. I moved to like a white neighborhood. So all I had was Video Music Box and Your MTV Raps, and I would record it every single day and watch it over and over. And I still have the tapes, but you had some of the most iconic moments, and I don't even know if you knew what you were doing at the time. And I'm gonna tell you even how much more iconic. You had the Technique 1200 set up with a mixer, and Dre was DJing. Bro, I was studying how you set up the turntable because I wanted to get Technique 1200s, and you would hear, I don't know how the audio was set up, but you would hear the click of the mixer. Like, it was so real. Nowadays they would filter that out. They would edit it.
Right.
Set up the audio so it would be more professional. Like, it was so raw that you would hear Dre's mixer clicking. You know what I mean? And it was like, this shit is authentic. Yeah. And although it was kind of you guys were goofy, but it was so real. You know what I mean?
Right.
It was like, it was corner goofy.
Yeah, it was us being goofy. Us, man. That's all it was.
But the Tribe One, the Naughty One, Black Sheep, Public Enemy, there's some fucking real moments on there. And it was every day.
Yeah, and especially on Fridays when we finally got around to doing live Fridays.
Yeah.
When we have the performances and the artists come in and perform. Those are some of my favorite moments on Yo MTV Raps.
Man, besides the rhyme from Yo MTV Raps is
right.
Let's try this. Hold on, I'm about to try something right now. Let's see. Let's check technology out for a second. See if this will work with us. Hold up. Pull up a couple joints here.
Okay, here we go.
See if it'll let us get sound too, though.
back to Young TV Rap Special Kung Fu Edition, starring the Wu-Tang Clan and Master
Unmute.
What's up? Is that for you? Woo.
Oh, for you too. Sound.
Let's introduce the Wu-Tang Clan
though,
to you out there. Whoever
We hear it.
You hear it too?
Yeah.
Check, I'll be the reservoir.
If you shut the fuck up.
Off heads, protect your neck.
I think it was him.
Ghostface.
Could have been Ghostface.
Check yours.
What's up? This is the judge of the genius, kid.
He's smart. It could have been this.
Yo, Raekwon the chef, kid. Word up.
Cook up some things, dude.
You go, a.k.a. Golden Arm Chef, y'all.
You can Golden Arm. Like
yo, this is Method Man. What's wrong with your man, man? This is Method Man. You know what I'm saying? Protect that joint.
What does Wu-Tang Clan mean? Somebody who speak up, tell us, everybody out there, what does Wu-Tang Clan mean?
Well, basically, Wu-Tang Clan, the Wu is the way, the Tang is the slang, and the Clan represents the family. Wu-Tang also represents the sword style and rhyming. See, being that we are lyrical or verbal assassins, we are fully aware that the tongue is symbolic to the sword, and when either or in motion, it produces wind. Now, wind comes in different currents. Some are cold, some are warm, and some are very swift and changeable, such as words. And when you enter these 36 chambers of the Wu-Tang, we come in many different currents. You know what I'm saying? Because we're chopping heads. So that's basically what the Wu-Tang represents.
Oh, that's a deep, that's very deep, man.
Stole that from me.
And where are the slums? Too. Where are the slums of Shaolin?
In China.
Basically, yo, the slums of Shaolin is in Staten Island. That's my name for Staten Island.
In New York. In New York.
Yeah, New York.
Funny as hell, man. I remember that episode vividly because they were not happy about my Master Wu outfit, bro. They were so serious about trying to get that message about Wu-Tang that, yo, they were pissed when I came out there in the karate outfit. But when Method Man laughed, right when I got up on Method Man, he was like, yo, man, chill. And he laughed. That's kind of broke the ice for the rest of them because RZA, Raekwon, Ghost, they was all looking at me like they really wanted to murder me on that set for doing that. Because, you know, they was all about Wu-Tang Clan. Ain't nothing to fuck with. It's serious. We the assassins on the microphone. They was not happy about that, bro. It was not.
Yeah. Was there ever anyone that when you met them early on, you could tell this is definitely going to be something huge? Like
or, them.
Really?
Them. Greek Fest at Jones Beach.
Go ahead. Them. Keep going. What happened to Greek Fest at Jones Beach?
I was at Greek Fest at Jones Beach. They just had a big Greek picnic or whatever you want to call it, festival at Jones Beach. And I was at Jones Beach. And I remember walking and they surrounded me. Like, and they was like, yo, you Ed Lover from Your Own TV Raps, right? I was like, yeah, what's up? I was like, they was like, yo, we the Wu-Tang Clan, right? And I was like, oh, I know you. You Prince Raheem. And they were like, no, it's the RZA now. And I was like, okay. And it was like, oh, I know the genius because you were signed to Geffen, right? Cold Chilling, right? He was like, no, it's the RZA now. Yo, we just did this. We got this break. And they gave me the tape. And on one side of the tape was Protect Your Neck. And on the other side was Method Man. Mm-hmm. And I remember going back to my car, listening to it. And I was like, yo, this is incredible.
Yeah.
I just knew it. I just knew that they was, and the Brat. Brat is another one. I just knew Brat was special. I knew it. I introduced Brat to Jermaine Dupri on the Crisscross tour.
So wait, oh yeah. So okay, I'm glad you brought that up. Tours, tours. How many different tours were you a part of?
Some of the Def Jam tours, but Crisscross.
So what was the situation? So take us through that. What was that tour? Who was on it? And what did you guys do?
Crisscross, MC Light, different artists, but it was supposed to be the Far Side.
Okay.
MC Light and Crisscross. And they were at Westbury Music Fair. And I was hosting it. Dre couldn't do it for some reason. So I did it by myself. And Far Side was
sorry,
dumb.
Pause 1 second. Which one of you motherfuckers has somebody being domesticated in the house washing dishes?
That's Ed.
That wasn't me. Oh, right now, that's my mother-in-law, yeah.
Yeah, it's a Sunday, man. People are doing dishes, Sy.
Tell her to stop clacking the dishes.
Interviewing it. Yeah.
No, she's good. All right, so keep going.
I'm hosting the tour at Westbury Music Fair. Far Side is ridiculously late. Stupid late. So late that they kind of...
How late were they?
They were late. They missed the opening slot. So Jermaine's father, Mike Malden, asked me, could I waste some time? Right? And I was like, yeah, I can waste some time. I got a couple of things that I can do. I can do a rap battle, and I could do an Ed Lover dance.
I was about
battle,
to say, was the Ed Lover dance already cracking at this point?
That's already ready. Yeah, it was cracking.
So everybody knew the Ed Lover dance. So, yeah, that's what I did. I wasted some time, and I messed with the crowd, and I had kids come up and do a rap battle kind of like the Apollo, and I gave them $100.
Were you just at the show? Or you
yeah,
were...
just at the show.
You just
there. I gave them $100 out of my own pocket. And then I had an Ed Lover dance contest and gave the winner of that, like Apollo, put your hand over their head and yell for who you think. Yeah, and then when that was over, they kind of like, they kicked the far side off the tour. It was like, yo, Ed, do you want to come on tour with us and do the same thing that you've been doing on the tour? And we had did Down With MTV. So I grabbed Todd One and I grabbed my DJ and we went on tour with Criss Cross.
That's crazy.
How long were you out for?
Oh, God. I was on two different tours with Criss Cross. So it was a lot of fun being on tour with Criss Cross. A whole lot.
So you were like
fun.
The host of the tour, kind of? Like
yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Did you bring out all the acts?
I brought out, yeah, pretty much. No, but Criss Cross, you didn't bring them out. I brought out Light. It was me, and then I would come back and introduce MC Light. And then Criss Cross had their own opening with the screens. Like, they huge at... You know, they're huge. They got the elevated platforms and all of this stuff going on. They're huge.
I got to tell you, it's like hip hop history now. There's so much that sometimes there are things you don't even quite talk about enough. Criss Cross is almost one of them. Like, it was so big and it doesn't get talked about that much now for how big a phenomenon the song Jump was. For everyone under the age of like 18, we're talking about, I don't know if there's ever been a bigger rap song among kids ever than Jump.
No, I don't think that.
Yo,
think
my
they
kids listen to Jump now because there's this thing called Go Noodle, which is like a kids platform.
Okay.
But they'll take like hip hop songs and they'll like kiddie them out a little.
Right.
So they have like House of Pain Jump Around. And they have Criss Cross Jump, and my kids are watching it, and my daughter, and I'm singing the song. My daughter's like, "How do you know this song, Daddy?" I'm like, "This song is from when I was a kid." You know what I'm saying?
They went a few times platinum on that album too. Yeah. So you got to think of all the kids knew pretty much every song that they had out. I Missed the Bus, you know, or every freaking song.
So they had the Super Cat remix.
The Super Cat remix, and then later, I must always mention this whenever I can, how underrated this is.
Tonight. Some of them cars that be bumping. Oh, that was really smooth.
That's a Super Cat.
Yeah.
Hold tight,
everything. Yo, this was a fire record.
Here we go.
It's funny because like the story gets told in a way, it feels like it was this quick blip, it was just a Jump, but it's like, nah, it went on for a while. Like it went on
for a good while.
It was Warm It Up, there was Miss the Bus, there's
even Tonight's the Night on the next album.
Tonight's the Night, there's All Right. Like, they had a lot of joints, man.
I mean, you know what the thing about it is that it made Jermaine's career, and then Jermaine is the one that kept going on and on and on.
Right.
Because then Criss Cross grew up, which is a problem we have with child stars and child actors. Once they grow up a little, it's like, how do you know, Michael Jackson figured it out, but a lot of people didn't.
Yeah.
Speaking of Michael Jackson, you definitely met Michael Jackson before, didn't you?
Absolutely.
Go ahead. I always ask everyone, absolutely, what's the Michael Jackson story?
With Criss Cross.
Okay. So what, when, where? Take us through it. Okay, hold on, Syph. We got to stop Ed because he's giving up.
No,
we
no,
have
I
to.
Hear more.
Well, you can.
I hear more.
We can, but you got to sign up for Patreon. That's how it works.
Oh shit!
We're giving you some of his stories about the greats, but he's got so many more. Like what Billy June? Almost another hour's worth. So
basically.
So patreon.com/oneepislife for nearly another hour with Ed Lover telling the stories of everybody in hip hop. But we love you. We love you if you're not Patreon. We just love you even more if you are.
Let me give you one tidbit before you go over to Patreon. You know, last week we had Mr. C on.
Sure, he's a great guy.
Versus. So Mr. C wanted to hear something part of the interview. And I said, yeah, no problem. Just hit up Billy June. He'll get you anything you need. And Mr. C said, the most beautiful classic line, who's Billy June?
Oh, yeah.
And I laughed hysterically. Wow.
Did you tell him who his father is?
I did. And he goes, oh, I know Billy.
Remember
the scrawny little redhead motherfucker with glasses that used to be around hanging out?
Right.
And he goes, wasn't his name Dan or something? I go, yeah, that's his slave name. His real name is Billy June. You know what I mean?
All right, we'll see you on Patreon, kids.
Bye.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hey, I'm Guy Raz, and on my show, Wisdom from the Top, I talk with CEOs and business leaders about the toughest challenges of their careers.
There's lots of ways to measure success.
Sometimes a company has to bet against itself.
We wanted to set ourselves apart by having a point of view.
Businesses really impact people's lives in pretty fundamental ways.
On Wisdom from the Top, some of the greatest business leaders of our time share their intimate stories of leadership, innovation, and transformation. Stories you won't hear anywhere else. Check out Wisdom from the Top only on Luminary. Now, back to your show.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.